Support for The Common comes from Bluey's Big Play. Join Bluey, Bingo, Bandit, and Chili in their first ever live stage show, a fun-filled show made for the whole family at the Box Center Wang Theater, May 18th and 19th. Tickets at boxcenter.org. Support for The Common comes from the law firm of Davis Malm. Whether you're a private business, a public company, a municipality, a nonprofit, or in-house counsel, their business attorneys help achieve your short and long-term goals. DavisMalm.com, DavisMalm.com.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. WBUR producer Amanda B. Land, welcome to The Common.
Hey, Daryl. Thanks for having me.
So, Amanda, you're a producer for Radio Boston, but you also do some reporting out here, apparently, because you have a story for us about how restaurants in our region are cooking up and serving an invasive species of crab that can be found here in New England. So these are green crabs. And how do you make an industry out of something you're trying to get rid of, right? But before we get into all of that, Amanda, just tell us about these green crabs.
So they are tiny, probably about 2 inches, maybe 3 inches if they're on the more mature side. And some of them aren't necessarily green. They could be gray. They could have a red or orange tinge. Some of them are green. And they're found everywhere. They're native to Europe, from Iceland and Norway down the Atlantic coast to sort of North Africa, Morocco area. And they're invasive everywhere else aside from that. You know, we're talking the East Coast, West Coast of North America, South America, South Africa, Japan, Australia. They've been on the East Coast since 1817, so over 200 years. And they were just discovered on the West Coast about 30 years ago in 1989. The numbers aren't clear. We just know that there's a lot of them, and there are more and more of them as we're seeing waters warm and climate change increase.
Oh, that climate change. What makes them an invasive species, though? What kind of damage can they do to our ecosystem?
Well, I'll say, I'll give them some credit here. They're an incredibly successful invasive species. They do well in many different types of climates, water temperatures, salinity of water, so the amount of salt in water. They're really adaptable, and that is part of why it's fascinating to study them, but they also have the potential to do a lot of damage. They can eat about 40 juvenile clams in a single day. They can clip sort of eel grass. If you go to a marsh and there's grass around the edges of marshes, that's considered eel grass. It's also underneath the water. They can clip that with their claws, basically, little haircut. And that takes away habitats for other species as well. And they tend to burrow into walls of marshes as well, which can accelerate erosion. So they've been sort of a nuisance, but cold winters were helping to keep the numbers in check, really, because if you have a deep freeze in a marsh, it controls the numbers. It kicks back the population. But as the waters are getting warmer, there's more and more of them. So if you think about, you know, hundreds of thousands of crabs in, you know, one area eating up each of them, 40 juvenile clams in a single day, that can really do a lot of damage to sort of an industry that we really depend on in New England.
Oh, yeah. Now, who had the idea to start eating these things, right? When did they start popping up at restaurants in New England? And what are chefs doing with them?
We don't know exactly when they started popping up in restaurants. I'll say it started sort of as a small scale, probably within the last 10 years. And people were sourcing the crabs through individual harvesters or smaller scale wholesale distributors. So it wasn't entirely as widespread as it is right now. I think that more restaurants have access to them within the last couple years because Wolf's, which is a major wholesale fish distributor in Boston, started carrying them. And that's part of the conversation, right? It requires people to buy in, people to sell the crabs in order for people to buy the crabs as well. So mm-hmm. I would say within the last decade, people started eating them or experimenting with them. But it really was within the last couple years in this region in Boston where it became easier to acquire them.
Okay, now how are chefs preparing these green crabs?
So we all can eat green crabs in two forms, in hard shell and soft shell. And the majority of people right now are eating them in the hard shell form. So that the easiest way mm-hmm. to prepare that is using a stock or a broth. So taking some water or some stock and infusing that crab flavor with that. Hard shell crabs are pretty difficult to open. And when you do, there's very mm-hmm. little meat in there. It's almost too much work for not a lot of return. Mm. Soft shells are really sort of the up and coming industry. And there are a lot of people who are working to try to figure out how to do that effectively. But there are a lot of challenges with that are still being worked out.
Got it. Now, what do they taste like?
Well, I tried one at Row 34, which is serving them in soft shell form as a slider. And I'll say mm-hmm. it tastes like, and I say this being conscious of, like, people say it tastes earthy when they don't like something, but it really does taste like earthy and marshy and I don't know. I'm not a seafood
Maybe like
person.
like a mushroom kind of thing?
Yeah, but also like crustacean-like. You know, it has a little bit of that crustacean air.
Mm, okay, okay.
Like lobster mushroom-y, if that.
Okay, how about this?
I'm really
selling
it.
Would you try it again? Yeah, would you eat it again?
You know, I'm not sure
about
that.
Too long of a pause.
I pause because it's soft shell crab is intimidating, especially for someone who is not a seafood person. Jeremy did a wonderful job. Jeremy Sewell, who's the chef and owner of Row 34, did an absolutely incredible job preparing it. So I'm not sure if I would try it in the soft shell form, but I'd be open to trying a broth mm-hmm. or other foods with it.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Bandit and Chili are coming to a theatre near you.
Do you want to play musical statues with us?
Join the Healers in their first ever live stage show, Bluey's Big Play.
Look, Mom, Dad's playing with us.
A fun-filled show made for the whole family. It's Bluey brought to real life. Book now for Bluey's Big Play. We can't wait to see you there.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back with more from Amanda Beland. So restaurants are cooking up these green crabs. And I want to know about how these crabs get to the restaurants. Tell us about what this all means for the fishing industry here.
I think it's an exciting opportunity. I mean, there's nothing set in stone right now. It really is sort of a developing or burgeoning industry, but as more and more fishermen are faced with regulations or populations of fish that are overcaught, the idea of adding an additional revenue source could really mean a lot to them on slower seasons. And it's crucial for them to do that. I spoke with Jeremy Sewell, chef and owner of Row 34 in Boston. Him and I went out on a skiff on Brave Boat Harbor in York, Maine, with his cousin Sam, who's a lobsterman, as well as Sam's business partner, Mike Macy. Sam and Mike are catching green crabs for Row 34.
You know, my family up here in Maine, you ate cod, you ate halibut, you ate scallops, you ate lobster. You didn't eat pollock or hake or redfish or flounder. You know, I used to bring pollock in from fishing all day. My grandmother would steam it and feed the cats pollock. But these are now mainstream fish and mainstream seafoods because, one, we've done a great job of eating all the other ones, so there's just not enough of them. So we have to figure out how to harvest the ocean in a different way. And two, we found out these things are delicious. They're really good.
Here's Mike talking about sort of the ecological impact that these crabs can have.
That's 40 pounds of green crab. And not a single other species. So you can see what they do to biodiversity. When these guys are around and fully established, it's like nothing else has a chance.
That makes sense. So it sounds like what has to happen is some celebrity chef or some tastemaker somewhere has to basically make green crab the it food, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that right now the biggest challenges within the industry is getting buy-in all around. There are so many green crabs to catch, but why would a fisherman take the time and the money to catch all these green crabs if they aren't going anywhere that's profitable? The main market right now for selling green crabs is bait. So you would sort of sell green crabs for like pennies on the dollar to bait companies. The restaurant industry for green crabs is not well established. In order to get buy-in from fishermen, there needs to be demand. But there isn't demand unless there's green crabs available and they're being prepared in ways that people find them exciting and accessible.
Somebody get Guy Fieri on the phone. We need the mayor of Flavortown to help us out. So, Amanda, at the center of all of this is this question. Is this a sustainable industry, I guess?
There is some debate about whether it's the right decision to build an industry off a species that you're trying to eradicate.
Yeah.
But I think where people are landing right now is that there's so many crabs that that's not even a question right now. I mean, you would have to do so much, like way more than what is being done right now, to make a dent in the crab population. Carolyn T. Polt from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute said that these efforts to eat green crabs, they're noble in their intentions, but she doesn't think that what we're doing right now will make a sizable dent in the population.
Currently, there really aren't any interventions that I'm aware of that are doing much to keep populations in check. There are a lot of green crabs. And so selling them on a limited basis for bait or for food is, it's not making a huge dent in the population.
So at this point, that's not even a question we should be concerned about, according to Carolyn.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that what could sort of move the ball forward is really getting the softshell green crab industry started. There's a lot of challenges with that. A lot of it has to do with infrastructure. A lot of that has to do with knowledge. When crabs molt or shed their shell, there's usually biological indicators on the crab's body that indicate that that is about to happen. And a lot of other crabs like blue crabs and rock crabs, there's a very obvious physical change that happens. And so when a fisherman catches that crab, sees those biological changes, they can separate that, what they call a pre-molt crab, from the rest of the pack, and then sort of freeze that biological process, keep it as a softshell crab, and sell it. And it's more versatile for people and chefs to cook and eat with. Green crabs do not have that neon sign that flashes that say, hey, I'm about to molt. There's been some research in New Hampshire looking into that, and they've said that they've sort of pinpointed that process, but they haven't gotten a lot of buy-in from fishermen to sort of pick up and learn the trade, to have that knowledge sort of readily available. And until that happens, the softshell green crab industry will remain small, and that will also limit, I think, how much we can be consuming them and in what ways.
Understood. Amanda, thank you so much for coming through to The Common and talking to us about this. This is very interesting. So, yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
That's WBUR producer for Radio Boston, Amanda Beland. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. Have you ever had a green crab? Let us know. Hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I will talk to you tomorrow.